irregardless of passion, if founders are working on something that's working out, they've got endless energy and love it, right? Yeah. But you can have a ton of passion for something and it's not working out and you'll have no energy to work on it. And I'm such a huge believer in that.
Imagine living your normal day and getting your car fueled up on demand. Seriously, check out LA Startup Refill Fuel and enter code WeAreLATech for $10 off. That's Refill Fuel. It's amazing. Literally, you can be anywhere and have your gas totally topped off the tank and not even have to deal with it. No more gas stations. So go to refillfuel.com. That's refillfuel.com. Code WeAreLATech for $10 off. We could not do this without the community believing in our vision together. We Are LA Tech is independently funded by you, the community. So to support We Are LA Tech, go to patreon.com/WeAreLATech. That's patreon.com/WeAreLATech.
Hi, everyone. My name is Brian Nickerson. I'm guest hosting We Are LA Tech. I've got a fabulous young gentleman in here today, Sam Batesh, head of influencer marketing at Hush. Sam, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here. This is crazy. I just got to LA a month and a half ago, and now I'm on the biggest tech podcast in LA.
So what is a strapping young gentleman like yourself doing at a beauty brand?
So good question. Interesting story. So I've been in the influencer space for going on 9 years now, since 2009. And I just closed down a company that I ran for the past 2 years that did influencer marketing software. We were trying to bring performance-based buying to influencer marketing, specifically based on impressions, which is where this is the reason why me and you know each other. Two of my biggest clients there, or two of the clients I work most closely with, I should say, are Loot Crate and Scentbird. Mm-hmm. And both those companies, especially Loot Crate, have really mastered working with influencers. And I found it extremely impressive. And I romanticized the idea of being able to work at a brand like Loot Crate or Scentbird, a beauty or gaming company that only sells online. And when I closed down my company, I went searching for exactly that.
And can you share the name of your company?
Yeah, yeah. So the company I started and closed 2 months ago, it was called Brand Plug.
Yep.
So we built the software. We tried selling before we built the software. So trying to get some revenue in the door, got up to like $100,000 in sales. And then when we started to sell the software after it was built, no one wanted it. So we managed another $100,000 in influencer marketing spend over the past 6 months, but decided to close down the company because it just didn't have product market fit. So time to move on to the next one.
Yeah. I mean, it's what a valuable experience, right? Like, people hear about the companies that succeed, mm-hmm. but for every company that succeeds, there's more than 99 probably that fail. Mm-hmm. And to go through that as an entrepreneur, I mean, tell us a little bit about that experience, because you must have learned something from it. And I think there's a lot of people that could learn from your experience too.
Yeah. I talked to my girlfriend about this, who's also an entrepreneur every once in a while. Like the number one thing that like pounces to the top of my head whenever that subject comes up is just how much faster I feel like I could do everything if I did it all over again, and how much time I wasted on so many things that didn't matter. Mm. And I think that might be maybe just a little bit more true of her and I, because we're younger, and we might have some obscure ideas about what running a business is like. But I'll tell you, I spent a lot of time thinking. The main takeaway just all relates back to the lean startup. It's thinking way too much about what I think customers want, and not just talking to customers and being really ruthless about figuring out what their problems are. And I know about 1,000 people listening to this, their brains just turned off hearing me say the problems of the customer. It's one of those cliches. It's just not going away. It's a cliche for a reason. That was the main takeaway, is if I did it again, there's a great book called Running Lean.
I think when you do it again would be my guess.
Yeah. there's a great book called Running Lean that condenses all the lessons, or the most important lessons of the lean startup, down to about 90 pages in the beginning of the book, and then has like a 90 page light, you know, cover of how to, you know, run marketing for a startup. And I think those first 90 pages are the most valuable 90 pages an entrepreneur could read, because it just outlines how to go about running really effective customer interviews and getting to the root of what someone would want out of your product. I don't think it's perfect by any means. I think there's an overemphasis in the book on finding multiple problems, when in reality, I think it's more likely just one big problem a lot of the times. That's the pain point. And then there's lots of little jobs that need to be done. There's also the jobs to be done framework out there that's like the Lean Startup Movement. But yeah, I think just way more emphasis on that is a big one. And then also just the how crucial it is to make relationships with builders in your life, like people who like designing, you know, software or building software, because the first year of my journey, I didn't have a team. I actually went through several teams. So I shouldn't say that. I went through a lot of bad teams before I landed on the team that ended up working out. So yeah, those are the two big takeaways.
Yeah, that's so true, right? Because finding like, what's that burning problem? Like, not just like, oh yeah, that's kind of a problem, or yes, right, you can hear from customers, that's, yeah, it's a problem, right? Like, but like, no, what's that burning problem where someone is actually making a decision and you can provide a solution that they're like, I want to do that. And that's, I mean, I don't know, that's like, that's sort of the magic of startups. If you can figure that out and find it and do it fast, right?
And you meet so many people, and I think this is, you know, I'm a more negative person than most, so I don't mind going here, but you meet so many people who have these ideas, right, that are, you know, they're nice to haves. They're stuck in their own head about, they think it's good. And I just think almost all those people fail. A lot of those people don't even really start when it comes to like building the product and getting it out there. And I think, you know, I don't want to put down anyone who's trying to be an entrepreneur. But I think, you know, I get it, you know, the lean startup and the wisdom of that just really hasn't, you know, it hasn't permeated through culture enough that anyone who thinks of a business idea is going to know that. But, what bothers me a lot is when those people can't take, you know, criticism and want to be, you know, Steve Jobsian and want to just have this vision that they say, no, your ideas probably aren't right about what it should be. Meanwhile, they should be inviting of as much criticism and ideas as possible. And I know, you know, one founder telling me about something isn't a user interview. In most cases, but a lot of times it is, right? Like if someone tells me about their music app that they're working on, and then I tell them the problem I have with music, I've had this exact experience happen, and then they're kind of dismissive of my ideas. I'm like, no, you don't get it.
Yeah.
It's like, you should be very curious in a conversation with another person.
Curiosity.
And you can think I'm totally wrong, but, yeah, that's something that's a turnoff to me and something.
Yeah.
A lesson,
I mean,
there.
having curiosity, right? Because as a startup, you're basically, it's like one big experiment all the time. And so having curiosity about what's happening, what's not, why is it moving? Why is it not moving? What's happening? Like, you can learn from every interaction.
Yeah. Especially in the early days when you have like 30 interactions a month to go off of, and you're like,
right. Yeah.
They're pulling you in 1,000 different directions if you pay attention enough. Yeah. Otherwise it's just like, I didn't learn anything this month, but we're good. And I think that's one of the reasons why my startup failed is I did a lot. I had a lot of these conversations, and I would, I'd be like fishing for comments. I'd be like listening for like a comment that would validate a hypothesis I already have.
Yes.
And not really trying to get at the core.
Yes.
And listening to myself say this, I think it's so tremendously hard to feel like I'm actually communicating what this experience is like. Like I can't imagine like hearing this podcast, like we're recording right now, a year ago, being someone else or, you know, myself, and going and internalizing that. I once heard in some podcast I was listening to, investors say, I never invest in a startup's or an entrepreneur's first startup. And you can point out, you know, Bill Gates and Evan Spiegel and say, well, what about them? But I think there's a lot that's true about that. There's some people who strike gold, but I think more often than not, you have to go through it at least once. And I think that's one thing I wouldn't say I'm ashamed of, but a huge mistake I made was fishing for the things that would validate. I come back to my team with like, well, I heard these three things over the past couple of months. Don't worry. Like so-and-so said, like they want this, which means they want what we want. And so-and-so said this, which means they're probably going to want what we want or what we're building in a month. And I just don't think I think it's really unhealthy.
Yeah.
It's really bad. You're wasting your own time, and it's really hard to tell yourself to stop doing that.
So, yeah. Well, I totally agree with you. And I almost want to slow down and see if we can dive into this point a little bit, because it's easier to see, like, you almost have to go through that and come out the other side to then see where you were blind, essentially, and where your ego was getting in the way of hearing what the market is actually telling you. Because basically, like, the market does not give a shit at all unless you've got something really interesting. And that piece, I mean, I remember, I can relate to what you're saying, and I feel like, I don't know if I'm ever done. Like, you just keep trying to get a little bit better around that. But I remember early days, like the first company that I started, I'm sitting there, like, it was almost like I'm always in pitch mode instead of always in curiosity mode. And it took a while of like, wait, this actually isn't moving to, and there's like, you know, sometimes it's even as simple as like reading the nonverbal cues in that conversation where, like, if the eyes start to glaze and you're not really getting stuff back, like, there's not actually an exchange, and therefore whatever you think is happening is actually not happening probably, or something else is happening.
Yeah, no, it's so crucial. And I think the psychology there, the ego element that you brought up, is not to turn this into like a therapy podcast, but it's like you find yourself so invested. I found myself, well, I'll just speak about myself and not try and prescribe what other people might be going through. I found myself so and I do think this is pretty common. Maybe not the most common case of a startup failing, but I found myself very wrapped up in the idea of being the founder of this company that a lot of people from the outside in, you know, think looks great. I've got Skullcandy as a client. I have Sennheiser as a client. I have Loot Crate as a client. And I find myself having so much momentum into this idea, a developer who's invested a lot of time into building this. And I found myself thinking over the last 9-10 months, well, maybe we're really not onto something, but if I try and turn now, it's going to be really difficult. And there's a really good chance, I really believe in this vision, so I'm just going to keep pushing for a little while longer. And I don't know what else I would do. There's so much unknown. Like, what if I go back into my user interviews and everyone's like, nah, influencer marketing, I got no problem. I got companies like Magic Links. We're good, right? Like, we got influencer, we're fine. It's like, at that point, you're like, well, screw it. I might as well just keep trying to start this and give up in 6 months. And that's exactly what happened to me. And, you know, you can definitely argue that there were some good lessons and some things that came out of the last 6 months of working on Brandplug. Made some good money on it as well, but not the right move in retrospect.
Yeah. I've heard a saying also, like, when you lose, don't lose the learning. And it sounds like there's a lot of learning that you've gotten out of that too, which is just part of the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember, and I want to get into Hush and why you're at Hush. But I remember, so Sam, when we were introduced, we were introduced by a mutual friend, Dave Trogan, who's an investor. Fortunately, he's an investor in my company. He was looking at your company at Brandplug. And I think, were you in maybe Santa Barbara at the time?
Yep.
And so Dave reached out to me, and he had already invested in us. And he said to me, you know, he's like, I met this guy, Sam. He's an influencer. He started this company. Everything we've heard, you sound like you're in your 40s in terms of your emotional intelligence, but share with the audience how old you are.
23.
And you've been in influencer marketing for 9 years. Yep. So what Dave Trogan said to me is, he said, Sam is a young kid. He's super smart. He's like, I don't fully understand exactly what his company is doing now, but I know he is going to be doing something interesting at some point in time. And I think you guys should meet. That was literally how he teed it up for me. And so now you're at Hush. So Sam, tell us a little more about Hush. What's the brand? What's the value for consumers?
Yeah. So Hush is basically Jet.com for makeup and skincare with a focus on mobile commerce. So our iPhone app and our Android app, although we also sell on web. We are really well known in the makeup community for, one, having a huge selection of products. So we carry hundreds of brands, thousands of products, way more stuff than you could find in any retail store, because we're not limited to the shelf space in a retail location. And that's really great, because what I've learned the past couple of months being at Hush is that, you know, unlike like a hardware company that would need to invest tens or hundreds of millions of dollars into making a product, You only need thousands to start a cosmetics or skincare company. And a lot of them are really high quality products, finding really interesting ways of differentiating themselves, from Korean skincare to stuff with oils you've never heard of that are monounsaturated and better for your skin. So there's all these great brands, but you know, Walmart can't stock them all, but mm-hmm. we can. And then we're also really well known because, and by the way, that all sort of falls under the umbrella of affordable makeup. So we don't, we stay away from super high-end stuff for the most part. And then we're also really well known for some products that we carry exclusively, that a company actually also located out of LA started recently makes, which are really affordable eyeshadow palettes and highlighter palettes. We worked with this company to launch these products exclusively through us because we're a huge believer in makeup. We're a huge believer that soon these super high-end brands are going to be losing out to brands that are making really similar quality products at a much cheaper price, because makeup isn't really expensive to make. A lot of these companies are buying these products from China at $3-4 and selling them for $45 to $65, and you know, those are software margins, right? Like that's insane. And that's it's been sustainable, but I don't know how sustainable it is, and I think a lot more money will be made in the long tail with products that you know, cost a lot less. And I'm stealing a line there that my CEO says a lot, that we heard from the founder and CEO of Jet.com, who's one of our investors and advisors.
Mark Lohr?
Yeah.
Is that amazing?
That all the money is made in the long tail, which I guess is part of the thesis of Jet.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now I get why you're the Jet.com
contributor.
All makes sense. And so you guys are located downtown LA?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and how many people are on the team now?
So we just hit 40. Yeah.
40 on the team.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's crazy. And it was only 5 about 12 months ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So it
speaks to the power of the value proposition that you guys have.
Yeah.
The other thing that struck me, you talk about like mobile first, and driving mobile commerce.
Yeah.
And I have a particular interest in the area, and maybe I want to tee up this question for you with some stats for the audience. Most brands and most retailers actually do a really crappy job of having a good mobile experience for buying. You'll see Google did a study about the mobile page load time for most retailers. And I think the average they did across the top 500 internet retailers. So these are, you know, Walmart, Nordstrom, Sephora, like big brand names are part of this study. Average page load time over 7 seconds.
Wow.
Terrible.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
When you just think of all the things that load fast, and brands are like, a lot of brands have thought of mobile as the last thing that they try to sell through. Then you look at conversion rates on mobile devices versus desktops versus desktop. Almost across the board, it's at least 3x lower on mobile. You have, you know, some brands are starting to innovate with kind of like one touch payments of like Apple Pay you know, PayPal, but ways where you can check out really fast and not have to type everything out. I'm curious, like to me, this is the future. And I'm in these conversations with brands so often where like they don't even understand that this is a problem. and really like there's a lot of brands that don't know that there are companies like Hush that are figuring this out from day one. And this is how consumers want to shop.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to steal another line from my CEO.
Who's your CEO?
So
share.
Alex Lin, who, it was in gaming before this. So a mobile gaming company that he sold before this. So, and it's funny, all three of our co-founders are guys. A lot of people are surprised by that, how he stumbled into this. And I can tell the story a little later how he did. The web isn't that sticky, right? Like it's almost like mercenary style shopping, where we're mercenary style marketing, where you get one sale and that person disappears into the ether. Now it's a little different if you're a brand that someone's obsessed with, like, you know, Kylie Jenner's brand sells mostly on web, I think, and those people are seeing it all the time. But that's, you know, Kelly's got this free promotion outlet that she doesn't have to pay a dime to post an Instagram post. And then everyone knows that there's a new product there.
And but just to give context around that. So I think there was a stat, it might've been Wall Street Journal, some large publication recently, first 18 months of Kylie Jenner's cosmetic line, I think $480 million of total sales.
Yeah.
That was just announced really recently. So I just wanted to set that context to your point.
Good context. Yeah. And then on mobile, I can't talk about Hush's specific numbers, but it's much better than, you know, one purchase and disappears. And again, our CEO was saying the other day that it's just so crazy that we have the ability to send push notifications to you while you're sleeping and tell you to shop, right? Like, not that we would do that, but like I can wake you up. Like it's just this crazy power where. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen, there's this company Chris Sacca invested in recently. Can't remember the name of the company, but basically you opt into this text that you'll get like once a week with products around a certain interest. So if you're an audiophile or you're into camping or tech, whatever, and you're talking about like 98% open rates. Like it's just this crazy paradigm on mobile that I think, you know, it sounds like such a dead horse, right? Like mobile, right? Like we as tech people, like that ship started to sail 6 years ago and it's probably just about sailed, right? And it's like, well, not necessarily. Like, can you think of, a cosmetic store that had tens of thousands of SKUs, you know, and you clearly could have one and there's not yet one other than Hush. We're getting to tens of thousands of SKUs. And then there's some really interesting data out of China as well. I don't know exactly how related this is to commerce, but have you heard how crazy voice usage is in like Siri type products in China? Have you ever heard this? Mm. So I can't remember who did the study and what the exact numbers were, voice usage, like monthly active users for a product like Siri on your phone is somewhere in the single digits. It's super low in the US. And then in China, I think it's over 60 or 70% monthly active users using voice. And that's because those people didn't grow up with a desktop. And I think there's some other factors that I'm not super familiar with. I heard the stat on another podcast where I hear all my stats. But tremendous way to go in voice. And you see it happening with Alexa. I think, you know, having a spot on someone's homepage is still crazy valuable, even though we all heard people talking about it 2-3 years ago.
Right.
A lot of people did, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. So people are buying through, the people are downloading the Hush app. Mm-hmm. Where can we find the Hush app?
iOS or Google Play Store. As long as you're in the US. Unfortunately, we don't have apps in any other countries right now.
And it's called Hush?
Yeah, called Hush. Yep. Hush, I think the tagline in the app store might be Hush Makeup for All. But if you just type in Hush, it should pop up, a little pink logo with white text on it saying Hush.
Yeah. Yep. So let's talk a little about Los Angeles.
Okay,
You're new here for a couple months.
Yeah.
Was it Hush that brought you here?
Yeah. So I went on the search and, you know, I wanted to land in San Francisco, LA or New York, but really just wanted to make the decision based on where the best opportunity was. And fell in love with the opportunity of leading influencer marketing at Hush. And I'd lived here before, so I wasn't scared of it. I still probably would have made the leap anyway, even if I hadn't. It's interesting. So the last time I lived in LA, I had a terrible experience. I have to tell you, I had the worst experience, and it's not because of the city, really. I was starting a company. We were helping musicians run their YouTube channels. So we helped Tyga, Mike Posner, Far East Movement, Rob Zombie, figure out what kind of content to create on YouTube and how to go about uploading it in a way that's going to maximize the amount of views it's going to get, in short. And then we take a percentage of the revenue that their YouTube channel makes. The team wasn't as mature as they all are now. So me and the two other people who I started it with, we were like 22, 23, and I was 19. And made some bad decisions because of our age. So just really didn't have a lot of fun in LA, because it's like one of those things. There's a Sam Altman quote where he says, you know, when founders, irregardless of passion, if founders are working on something that's working out, they've got endless energy and love it, right?
Yeah.
But you can have a ton of passion for something and it's not working out and you'll have no energy to work on it. And I'm such a huge believer in that philosophy. My personal passion is biology. I'm not into influencer marketing as the be all end all Sam who I am. I want to move into biotech. I want to have a positive impact on people's average lifespans. But I know that I can make a huge difference in the world by accumulating money and spending that on investing in biotech companies or having the freedom to just sit on a beach and learn about biology and pay three tutors to, you know, help me learn about that. So I'm doubling down on what I'm good at, right? Yeah. So anyway, back to LA, didn't have the best experience of it, but had a feel for how cool it could be. And now that I'm back here, I don't want to say I'm obsessed with it, but I do. There are some things about LA that are like, I want to say you don't get it. You get this amazing balance between enough going on tech-wise to enjoy yourself, but not too much going on that you're creating a bunch of really weak relationships with dozens and dozens of people because, you know, drinks culture there, coffee culture. Yeah, I heard my brother say it the other day. My brother's at Goldman Sachs in town. He's like, oh, there's coffee culture at Goldman. There's like meet everyone you possibly can culture in San Francisco, I feel like. And at least these very transactional, dirty feeling conversations. Yeah. And you get that in LA too, especially in the entertainment scene, which I experienced a little bit with my last company. But now that I feel like I don't feel like I'm having those sort of conversations in LA. And I hate being around a bunch of skyscrapers. If I were to wake up every morning in a loft and then walk out onto a dirty street, it just feels terrible. Like being able to walk out of my apartment in Hollywood and see the Hollywood Hills
is such
a relief to see, you know, washes over me like, oh, this is awesome. You know, it's relaxing, right? Like I just don't.
Sounds like a good thing you ended up here instead of New York.
Oh my gosh.
There's skyscrapers there.
So I love that. And then the influencer space is here, although I don't really think it matters that I'm near the influencer space. I think we're here because of makeup. Actually, because there's a big clothing and makeup scene downtown. I think a lot of it has to do with how easy it is to get product to our warehouse that's near downtown. And then because we've got so much inventory, we can't keep a ton of inventory or so many different SKUs. We can't keep a ton of inventory for all that. But yeah. And then I'm obsessed with food. So the food scene here, it's definitely not as good as San Francisco.
You've been to Philippe's yet?
No.
Oh, in downtown.
You see my face just light out? I saw it.
Yeah, it was good. we'll do a little, I just went there this last weekend, but it's a LA institution. It's a French dip place.
Oh, cool.
Philippe's it's right near downtown. So it's right near you.
Perfect. Yeah. LA just has this really cool balance, in my opinion. So I getting back to like the meet everyone you can culture. Like I think, again, you make a bunch of weak relationships doing that. You don't go deep with a lot of people. Telling someone you're busy, like, because you want to like meet this VC at Crunch Fund is I'm friends with the guy who's an associate at Crunch Fund, so I don't want to say that, but you know, I could see that happening so much to me if I were to live there because I've experienced it just visiting there. And really, like, you just got to do the work, right? Like, you can't do great work if you're meeting with a new person every other night. And I don't know what, I mean, I work all the time. I put an extra, you know, 2 hours of work in when I get home a lot of nights. Not every night. I'm not a believer in, you know, working till like midnight, like a lot of people in Silicon Valley do. But I think it takes away from a lot of productivity to do that. Anyway.
Yeah. So other LA tech companies that we talked a little bit about in the fashion scene.
So Fashion Nova is the one like I get really excited about here. So out of respect for the person who told me the number, I can't say exactly how much revenue they're doing, but Fashion Nova,
it's a big number.
Fashion Nova is doing a lot in revenue. Yeah. Let's just say comparable to Forever 21 and they're 5 years old.
Yeah.
And it blows my mind what I've heard about them. So Fashion Nova, for people who don't know, it's like Forever 21, but online only. It's a little bit more risque clothing. So it's a little bit more revealing, I would say. But really at its core, the genius of it, from my understanding, is the ability to rapidly test products to figure out what works. So some people out there have probably heard of fast fashion, right? There's all these articles that popped up a year or two ago, or even in the past year, about fast fashion, which is, you know, the shift from really big brands. I'm struggling to think of a good example.
Zara
is fast fashion. I'm thinking of like before fast fashion. Oh, so like who would copy what's on the runway and get it to the store in like 8-9 months, right? Mm-hmm. And then Zara comes in and they do it in 2 to 3 months.
Yep.
And then the model at Fashion Nova is what some people are calling extra fast fashion, super fast fashion. I can't remember what my friend told me who's in that industry, but they're getting it made locally, LA or Mexico or whatever, and cutting that down from 3 months to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that to make it sound like a good soundbite. That's literally what they're doing. They're cutting it down to like 3 weeks. Yeah. That's the one I'm obsessed with.
Yeah. I hear you with that. And I don't think they still don't have physical retail, right?
No.
Maybe they have a spot. I don't think they have.
I don't think so.
As we kind of get to wrap up the show, you know, Sam, one of the things we like to ask is, you know, if you had a ask of the community, how could the community help you? And what would be kind of the one thing that stands out for you?
So, I've been in the influencer space for 9 years and, I really, you know, I don't know how comfortable you feel saying this, but I'll say, I really feel like it's a lot of really unsophisticated, people who don't really know what drives ROI, what drives impact for brands. You know, you could work with someone who spends $10,000 on an influencer for an Instagram model on behalf of a cosmetics brand and doesn't realize that person has 90% male followers because her butt's out in every picture. And that's what men are looking at. And I've got the data to show that. Anyway, so I really think I'm going to build my career very likely over the next 10, 20 years as a person in this community who can come into a consumer brand and really make it a data-driven process that drives 3, 4, 5, 6 thousand sales for every dollar invested. So I'm looking for consulting gigs. I'm still working with Sennheiser and Skullcandy and bringing on a couple more consulting clients over the next couple months, and really going to be looking to, take on a couple advisorships and just kind of grow my brand in that space and become known for being that guy. So if there's anyone out there who's got a consumer brand that's digitally native, if you're the next Soylent, Allbirds, Fashion Nova, or you know someone who is, I'd love to talk to them. I'm always happy to give an hour of my time for free and tell you, look, you know, go spend your first bit of money this way. And then if everything I said was true and was helpful and you think it makes sense for me to come in and tell you how I'm doing things at Hush and how they did things at Loot Crate and Scentbird, then reach out. So if you want to reach me, we've got a little consulting website. It's called Ads Not Influence, ADSNOT, influence.com. And you can reach me at sam@adsnotinfluence.com.
Amazing. Yeah. And in your role at Hush, is that the best way for people to connect with you? Or if people want to connect with you, what's kind of best way?
LinkedIn for sure. Yeah. Or Facebook, if you want to find me on there more often.
Okay.
So yeah, especially cool. If there's anyone in LA who wants to just grab drinks or anything like that, like I'm new to the area. I'm looking to meet people who really know their stuff here. And, I would love to meet people.
Amazing. And if you would, just spell your name so folks know.
Yeah, yeah. S-A-M. Last name, B as in boy, E, T as in Tom, E-S-H.
Sam, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Brian. This is awesome.
We Are LA Tech is independently funded by the community. We couldn't make this happen without your support. If you too want to contribute to We Are LA Tech and see us making the podcast, building the mobile apps, creating the events year after year, consider contributing at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/WeAreLATech. Thank you. We appreciate you.